So this is the West Coast Project podcast for the Americans. I'm here with Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hey, so I'm in Northern California. You're in Georgia?
Atlanta, Georgia. Yep.
Yeah, Alpharetta. How far is Alpharetta from Atlanta?
It's about 15, 20 miles north.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice out here in the green suburbs of Atlanta.
Cool.
Lots of trees.
Yeah, so we're trying to do this podcast on the Americans, and we're going to start with a pilot, which was a couple of years ago now. I guess they're about to start season three, right? Season three is in January?
That's right.
So we're going to do a little test podcast here with a pilot just to see what we can come up with. But what did you think? I interrupted you right before the podcast, but you were going to tell me about what you remembered from the pilot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I was talking about watching it again and sort of, you know, kind of regathering an understanding of the series and getting some details that I'd missed the first time around. And I have to say, like, that, you know, the beginning of it sort of really struck me as kind of being really theatrical. And you know, that the tease, I guess that's what they call it, like the first part. Before each episode begins, that was really, really great tease. To me, it felt like the beginning of a movie, like a trailer for a movie, and it kind of reminded me of Alias in a way, which I guess is appropriate because it's about spies. So I thought it was dark. I thought it was, really action-packed and interesting. But then the things that I thought were really clarified by watching it the second time around was that the guy that they kidnapped, the one who was, he was a turned agent, like he had defected to the United States, but he was originally a Russian agent. That guy was the guy who had the bad history with Elizabeth from the KGB, from like
right. When she performed. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And I didn't catch that the first time I watched it. I had to watch it again, and then I realized that guy was the bad guy.
Yeah, he was the captain. Yeah, I didn't catch that either until I rewatched it. But it was really well put together because he is that guy, and it makes clear why she's so adamant about like not just giving him up and giving him back. Ultimately, later in the episode, she wants to finish right. him off, and now we right. know why.
Yeah, and I thought it was, I don't know if you caught this, but it was really interesting what happened in the garage when she started to fight him. She did the same exact fight move and the same exact kill move on him that he did on her the first time around. It was like a reverse of that fight.
Oh, from like 15 years ago or whatever when they right. were in Russia?
Right.
Yeah. That's cool.
I thought it was really cool.
Well, the first 10 minutes of this pilot were really well received by all the critics and by all the fans. It was almost like a 10-minute music video.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was talking about when I said the tease. The tease that was at the beginning, that's what I'm talking about. Like, apparently that's a part of, like, any kind of, like, television series or something. There's, like, the beginning first, like, 3, 4, 5 minutes of it usually is called the tease or something, or the teaser. But this one was extended. And so it was really, I thought it was really, really well done. And it's like what you're saying, I went to read about it afterward, and there were a lot of, like, really critical raves about how well that was done.
Yeah, they played some really cool music from the time of the series, which I guess is like the early 80s. So they were playing some cool Fleetwood Mac song, and it was just really, you know, it just really caught everybody's attention. I guess you have to do that in a pilot, right? They're trying to sell the series and get people to buy in really quickly. So they made it really catchy right at the very start.
Yeah, compelling and kind of draws you in. And yeah, I thought it was great. It was dark and really, you know, very, I thought it was really theatrical, really cool.
So the pilot was 90 minutes. It didn't seem like longer than an hour, but it was a longer episode. It was 90 minutes. And the first thing we see is Carrie Russell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she was in Felicity. I think that was the TV series that she kind of got to sort of become famous from. And that was in the late 90s to early 2000s. And she was also in Mission Impossible 3 and the movie Waitress. And then there was a movie more recently called August Rush. And then, of course, now she's in The Americans.
Yeah, cool. Good research. I didn't know that much about her. She's very attractive and she's very smart. I really like her in this role. So let's just check in into where they are with this scene. She's after some guy at a bar who's like, I guess he's an American diplomat, right? She's wearing a blonde wig, so she's in disguise. And it's very 1981. I guess 1981 is the time frame. But okay. We hear Quarter Flash and Harden My Heart, this old music from 1981.
Yeah.
And she's portraying herself as some hooker, I guess, at this bar, right?
Yeah, she seems like some sort of prostitute or something. Yeah. The feeling that I got from hearing that music was just like, you know, the worst 80s movie that you could ever, you know, kind of like that music, that particular song just killed me. It was that to me was like the evident of the worst of the 80s music that you could possibly think of.
Yeah. Do you view the 80s as like a bad time of music or a good time?
It depends on the genre. I think that that punk rock in the 80s was fantastic. And I think rap in the 80s was fantastic. But pretty much most of the other music was not.
Yeah, you know, I think they were trying to be pretty cool. I don't think they were trying to be campy and like, oh, this is the cheese of the 80s. I think they were trying to be pretty cool. And that, you know, Quarter Flash was probably pop. They were probably like top 40 of the 80s. They weren't.
Yes.
You know, they weren't rap. Exactly right. They weren't cutting edge, but they were probably popular.
Right. Not like Rush, which was really weird to me because it felt like that particular bar scene, like that music set the perfect mood because it was kind of, it did sound kind of like bar music. But then when it was important to have this like really, really cool pulse pounding, you know, music that was kind of like a score, then, you know, then they were playing Rush and that was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, they were playing that Tusk song over and over from Fleetwood Mac.
I'm sorry. Yeah, not Rush. Yeah, you're right. It was Fleetwood Mac. But yes, that's that fantastic music. I love that song, and it was perfect. Because, it kind of had that.
It was like they either made the set, the scenes to that music, or the music to the scenes, because it was so fitting for what they were doing.
Yes. Yeah, it was. I thought it was perfect. Yeah, I really, and in fact, the first time that I watched The Americans, like that particular, that 10-minute scene that they did, that actually made me, I turned it off. Like after I watched that, I turned off the television and I went and grabbed my family and said, guys, come in here. You need to sit down and watch this. This is going to be one of those series that we all watch together. Which I kind of did. I did the same thing with Breaking Bad. And I've done it with a couple of other different TV series that I thought, okay, this is going to be amazing. So we should all watch it together as a family. And I did that with The Americans because it was just, it was so good. And I knew it was going to be something great.
Cool. So let's go through it. So this woman is Elizabeth. Kerry Russell plays a woman, Elizabeth. And I was about to say, well, she's a prostitute, but what really is she? And she's really like this housewife. But what really, really is she? Because she's not really a housewife. She's actually a spy, pretending to be a housewife, pretending to be a prostitute. So it's deep right off the bat. But she's going after this guy to get secrets from him because she's pretty and she can get that from him. And she's going to take those secrets and use it for the Soviet government. But we find out her husband is Philip, and he's played by Matthew Rhys. Mm-hmm. What is he in? Do you know anything about him?
About in Philip his, as...
Well, his other acting roles.
Matthew Rhys? Actually, no, I don't know a lot about him. I know he's, I'm pretty sure he's related to maybe those other British actors or with the same similar surname. But I don't know a lot about him as just like as an actor in his field. I'm looking at him though, looking at him right now, and he was on Brothers and Sisters, and before this, and then he also was in a movie called The Edge of Love. But yeah, I don't know him much from before this.
It was pretty cool how they took these relatively minor, I guess, actors, and they, you know, they all performed perfectly for this their roles in this pilot. So the scene continues with like this guy, this captain, this Russian dude who's a defector, and he's essentially on the American side. But he's bragging, right? He's bragging while Elizabeth is stripping in front of him. And she's undisguising herself, I guess, just stripping, and he's bragging about his role as this big shot American diplomat or politician, I guess, right?
Yeah, he's talking big and trying to make himself sound important, and while he's doing that, he's giving away secrets, and he's talking about the guy, the turncoat, the guy who's defected.
Yeah, Timoshev. So it jumps to 3 days later, and that's where we start to hear this Fleetwood Mac song, Tusk, which is a pretty cool song. Just like you said, it's like it's made to be a soundtrack to the events in this episode. But Elizabeth now is with him in the apartment, right? This defector guy, and then Philip and some other guy are watching them or watching for people to come up the road and kind of protecting her while she's in the apartment.
Well, what I saw was that she goes and she's like, she pays a guy to get into his apartment and watch for the defector. Right. So she's paid this guy who lives in the city. Like she hands him $60 or something and says, "Can I borrow your window?" She gets in and she's watching. And then her husband, Philip, and the other guy are like around the corner and they're waiting. And it looks like that they've got a view of her, like up in the building. She can see, you know, she can see Philip, and she can see also the defector guy. And it looks like that Philip's looking at her to try to get signals to try to make sure that they can see the defector guy coming so they can grab him. But the guy who's defecting, what's his name again? I'm sorry.
Timoshev.
He stops. And it's like he gets a feeling that something bad's going on. So he turns heel and runs. And then they take off and they start chasing him.
Yeah, what tipped him off? How did he know that they were right around the corner?
Well, I don't know. Because to me, what it looks like is that he just kind of stops and he gets almost like a sixth sense. I don't know if there's any reason that he can tell unless it's something that is uncovered to us so far, like that we can't see it, because to me it just seems like he just stops and he looks and it's almost like he feels like something isn't right. Did I miss something?
No, I didn't. That's it. That you described it perfectly. He has his dog with him. Like his dog doesn't warn him, or it's not like he has any surreptitious signal or something. He just kind of knows. It's like you said, he has a sense that there's trouble around the corner. And he stops.
Literally.
Yeah, he stops. He stops right just in time, and they jump out and start to chase him. And one of the guys, there's Philip and Rob. Philip is Elizabeth's husband, but Rob gets stabbed by Timoshev.
Right.
And I guess they catch him, but Rob is in trouble medically. Right, they have to drop Rob off at the hospital for some emergency. They can't they can't pull up to the hospital. Hey, we got this guy, because they're undercover,
right?
So they have to drop him off, and we don't see much more of Rob because he doesn't make it through this. But
right, and they when they drop him off, Philip tells him, and remember this is the thing that was kind of interesting to me from the beginning, actually, because in these early scenes, this is where you start to see that Elizabeth is so much more bought in to the whole cover aspect of it than Philip is, it seems to me, because she's the one who's like, no, you know, the mission comes first. She doesn't want to take him to the hospital. She doesn't want to do anything to help him. You know, but Philip insists. And when he takes, Rob and, you know, drives, like, is walking him up to the hospital, he says, you go in as a John Doe. And then, you know, and then he tells him, you know, no names or something like that. And, you know, and then sends him. And then he said something encouraging. I think it was something like, you've been through worse or something like that. Or it was something, there was some words of encouragement that he said to him as he sent him off, like, into the hospital, basically trying to encourage him, saying, you know, like, you can make it up to these doors. Just push yourself, you know, basically you can make it. Go in as a John Doe, you don't have a name or something. And then, you know, and then he hears, like, maybe 2 days later that the guy didn't make it.
Yeah, Elizabeth is way more committed. She's a hardcore soldier, essentially, for the Soviets. And Philip wants to be, Philip's, like, tempted by America. He wants to enjoy the fruits of America. And so, you know, she's more hardcore than he is.
What do you think about that, though, you know, I think it's kind of interesting looking at the more personal side of things, as far as Philip and Elizabeth go, as far as their relationship goes. I kind of feel like that he loves her. Like, he's more invested in their relationship as an actual relationship than she is. 'Cause to me, it seems like, at least from the beginning, that she, sees it as a job. She, like, this whole thing for her is a cover. Like, she's, you know, she's there, you know, this is her quote unquote spouse instead of her spouse. And this is her, you know, her quote unquote family and not her family. And it seems to me like he is not that way, because in this episode, he, you know, he listens to the recording of her with that, the FBI guy, right?
She's trying to be a soldier, I think, like I said, and he's trying to be more compassionate and, you know, like, trying to help this guy get fixed in the hospital.
Right.
And, but that's the beauty of the series, right? Because it's like, is it a romance or is it a spy story or what? Because it's a mix. They blur the lines sometimes.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. Just really from the pilot episode, you can see the actions that Elizabeth takes are based in defense of Russia always. And his are more based in, love and emotion and passion and that kind of thing. And the reason, and loyalty. And the loyalty is not too specifically to Russia. It's more to, like, love and to idealism and to himself and to his family. The reason I say that is because the parts of the show that really stood out to me this time around, like, were the choices and the decisions they made were, like, Philip, for example, when he's in the mall with his daughter, and the pervy guy is there with his girlfriend, whatever that young child was that was with him. You know, Philip was motivated by protection. Like, he wanted to protect his daughter, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, also when he killed the guy, when he realized that Timoshev was, that he had really hurt Elizabeth, he killed him. He didn't just kill him by, like, shooting him or, strangling him or something. He actually looked that guy in the eyes and killed him while he, like took the breath out of his body.
With his bare hands. Yeah, it was intimate. You're right, it was.
You know, it was a passionate murder that he did against this guy, and it was because of Elizabeth.
Well, let's work our way up to that. So here we are. We've got a couple more curveballs here, Jamie, because, like, Stan Beeman shows up. Noah Emmerich is Stan Beeman, who's the neighbor of Elizabeth and him. And they and he's working for the government, right? He's a U.S. government official. And he's their neighbor. He's like he's all friendly and coming over and introducing himself. And they get invited over to their house. But this guy's a great actor, Noah Emmerich. I don't know what else he's been in either, but he's really perfect in this role as the, I guess, CIA guy.
Yeah. Anti-intelligent is his field. He was in The Truman Show. Yeah, I remember him. He was he played Truman's best friend, Jim Carrey's best friend in The Truman Show. That's the movie that I remember him from. Yeah.
But his very job in this series is to flush out people like Philip and Elizabeth. His job is to catch spies like them. And here is their neighbor, and they're all friendly at first.
Right, And she is suspicious and feels like that maybe that... No. Philip is the one who's suspicious, and he thinks that they're being maybe closed in on. Isn't that right?
And yeah, he's wary of this guy, Stan. So they got this guy in the trunk, right? This Timoshev guy that they caught. He's in the trunk of their car in their garage in the suburban house. And they're just having a normal little breakfast with their kids. So we meet their kids. Their kids are Paige, who's a little bit older. What is she, probably 14 or 15?
Yeah, I think she's 13.
13, okay. And Henry, who's her younger brother.
Right.
Who might be 10, 11. And they're getting ready for school. They're having breakfast. And so the roles of all these people are set now. So Philip and Elizabeth run a travel agency. They're just like a normal American couple. They're really Russian spies, but they have this American family, and their children are cool, but the children don't know the secret either of them being Russian spies.
Right.
And then this guy, Noah, who is, or Stan, Stan is the guy in the show, is their neighbor, and he's like the Hank of Breaking Bad. He's like right in on them, and he doesn't know a thing about what they're up to.
That's a good way to put it.
But his job is to catch the very people just like them, and you know that's his main focus in life.
Yeah, and you know, and he's got that kind of like he's kind of on the edge. He's got his suspicions and. You know, that kind of thing. But his wife doesn't help things very much because she's kind of like, oh, you're being paranoid. You know, these are the most normal people in the world that you could be living next to. And you know, he's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So even though, you know, he's suspicious from the beginning, but, you know, his suspicions don't, like, they aren't really supported by what all's around him, his environment.
Right. But you got to think of people, if they're really going to be good at this job, you know, they're going to look like the most normal people in the world. They're going to look like the regular neighbors next to you.
So yeah, exactly.
It's really cool the way they set it all up. So Elizabeth, now they got this guy in the trunk. He's a guy that Elizabeth, we're going to find out pretty soon why she hates him, but she hates this guy. He's like the turncoat working for the Americans, Russian guy. For one thing, that kind of that tweaks our allegiances, our alliances, right? We want to root for the Americans because we're American, right, Jamie? But no, I'm rooting for these guys. I'm rooting for the Russians because they're my favorites so far in what I've seen so far. I'm not rooting for Stan. I don't want Stan to catch them. I want them to get away with whatever they're doing.
So, right, yeah.
So that's an interesting tweak. But so Elizabeth goes out to the garage. This guy's in the car, in the trunk of the car. And then we see a flashback of why Elizabeth hates the guy. And it's Elizabeth when she was a young cadet or whatever they called them in the Russian army, Russian spy army or whatever. She's boxing. She's sparring. And she's in a ring with a guy boxing and sparring. And Timoshev is a captain or a boss of this other guy that she's sparring with. And he comes in. He's like, let me show you how to fight. And he starts boxing her, sparring her, and then he ends up raping her,
right
in the round of them sparring. So we find out right away why she's going to start to hate this guy, or why she has such enmity towards this guy.
Right. Yeah. And it's a pretty brutal scene, and I thought it was really it was interesting for a number of reasons. I think part of it was the aggression and the kind of like the interaction between the two of them, because it seems to me like the series, there's a lot of like mirroring, as far as, physicality goes, when, if there's a kind of, like fighting or, passion or any kind of, interaction between, characters, the way that the physicality is, expressed can be mirrored in other places or, made to seem similar in other places. And I think it gives a different sort of like a, an additional bit of, understanding to, or depth to the story, to the, to whatever's happening between the people. And I'll explain more of that later, as we go through the episode. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting the way that he did it. And the fact that, that what he did to her was violent in the way that it was. And I'll explain more later.
Yeah. So later on we see the kids just doing homework. So they intersperse this vicious guy that raped Elizabeth now being in her trunk in her garage with the kids doing homework like 25 feet away in the kitchen. Or they're not really doing homework. They're just being home, but they're reading comics and they're doing home type stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's really like interesting the dramatic difference, you know, that's 25 feet away. Mm. She's a Russian soldier, but she's an American housewife at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And then they show like Philip being like a pretty fun dad. He's like doing the ice cream nose game with the kids and mm-hmm. and ultimately with Elizabeth teasing her too. He's poking their noses with ice cream.
And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so it was very domestic. They made these pretty brutal spies, you know, appear to be like a Norman Rockwell family. They're really happy as a family.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And then I wonder about that too. I wonder, you know, about how much happiness is there. And to me, again, it kind of seems so much like Elizabeth is really just playing a role. And it's a good time for that. I'm glad you brought it up just now, because I think it was really interesting to me. And I started to pick up a bit more on the second time I watched it, is that Elizabeth never really is able to fully immerse herself into this role as an American, as a mother. For example, when Paige was talking about school, she was talking about her teacher and something he taught in the class that day. And she said that the teacher was talking about the Russians being bad. And Elizabeth said to Paige, "Oh, is that teacher that has the hair lip? I don't know how you can look at him all day." And Paige said, "Mom, that's his handicap." And so like basically the child was trying to teach the mother to be compassionate, but Elizabeth was angry with the teacher and irritated by the teacher because he was talking bad about Russia. And, you know, and it's the same thing at, when they're having ice cream, their son, what's his name? Henry. Henry is talking about landing on the moon. And Elizabeth says, you know, the moon isn't everything. You know, it's a big deal to just get into space. And which we know, of course, that the Russians were the first to go to outer space. The Americans were the first to land on the moon.
Right. So she's undermining it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's always kind of the running current, that undercurrent that Elizabeth has, you know, whenever there's any opportunity, it's like she can't help herself. She has to defend Russia in some kind of way.
All right. Well, let's take a few more curveballs here, because we got Stan next door as this CIA agent. And now we're going to start to see some sexual curveballs here, because Philip now is meeting with Martha Hansen, who's the woman who works in a high-level agent's office as a secretary, and he's going to flirt with her to get secrets from this guy's office. Uh-huh. And that's a whole other can of worms that we're going to see a whole bunch more of in the series.
Okay. All right. Where they're using their wiles to get information in pursuit of their aims as they're in their roles as spies.
Yeah. So what did you think, Jamie, of this guy with Philip and Martha? Do you cringe when you see them, or do you, is it interesting, or is it like exciting, or what? I cringe.
Yeah, all of the sex stuff that where it's like the two spouses are going against each other, like they're, you know, they're kind of, you know, cheating on each other, that all that stuff is cringeworthy for me. It makes me intensely uncomfortable. Yeah,
because they got to be realistic. They got to convince the other person. You know, he's got to convince this woman that he's attracted to her, and that he eventually becomes convincing enough that he's like maybe marriage material for her. And he's married to, you know, well, and then it's like a double. He's married to Elizabeth under the guise of being married, but he really likes Elizabeth. He's really in love with her, I think, you know, but he's pretending with this other woman, Martha.
Right.
Boy. So next we see, here's curveball number three. Philip's got a cool hiding place in the garage or somewhere in the house. It's a fuse box, and behind the fuse box cover, there's like all his disguises, and there's money and weapons and stuff. But he has a tape recorder there with a recording of Elizabeth having sex with a guy, probably that guy in the bar that we first saw.
It is the guy. That's the guy. Yeah, that's the recording.
So he hears her whole interaction with him, seducing him to give her the secrets.
Right.
And it's like sexual. It's like if you were a husband of this woman and you heard that, it would be like her boyfriend or whatever. Romantic interest. It'd be hard to hear that stuff.
Yeah, that's the stuff that's like what you were saying is cringeworthy. I that stuff is so uncomfortable to hear and to see to actually see the actor, you know, reacting to as the character. It's horrible.
Yeah, he's hurt.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm cringeworthy. I'm thinking like, okay, that's cringeworthy because he's hurt. He's like a little jealous, right? She's being sexual with another man. But what about Martha? Martha's fallen in love with Philip, right? She's going to fall for this guy, and he's a faker. He doesn't really care for her.
Right.
So I'm cringing for that. Like, she's, like, fooled, and she's going to have her heart broken.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I think the whole thing is, I think what's kind of genius about the writing here on the show and the acting as well, because as you're watching it, I mean, for me, I cannot ever escape that thought in the back of my mind that like there's so much emotional cost, there's so much human cost involved in pursuing your ideals. You know, these people have, and especially with Elizabeth, I just, you know, scene after scene after scene, I look at her and I think, gosh, you know, I mean, is it worth it? Because it's almost like you've lost your humanity. You're not really a person. You're only an ideal. Because everything that makes you human, everything that makes you value having a life, is stuff that is either a lie for you, or it's something that you, you know, that you can't actually fully enjoy because of your job. Or, you know, or it's something that you've already lied about, like your children.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it makes you wonder what the value of your life actually is and what the thing is that's supposed to really matter.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you as a woman pick up on Elizabeth, because me as a guy, I'm picking up on Philip. Like, how could he hurt this woman, Martha, like this? How could he fool her like this?
Isn't that interesting?
Okay, so let's get on to this goon you were talking about that's picking on Paige or flirting with Paige. This older creeper guy is in a store somewhere, and he's like flirting with Paige. Oh, if you're right, she's 13. She's like a barely adolescent. This guy's like 30-something or plus or more. And you're right, he's got a girlfriend who looks like she's like 19 or 18. And Philip is like trying to protect her and be comforting to her too. Like, you're getting older, honey. He's trying to describe it to her. Like, you're getting older, honey. You're going to be attractive to men. You know, he didn't say all this, but I think that's what the feeling was that he was trying to convey.
Yeah,
I don't even know what else to say about it, but it was very creepy. The guy's flirting with Paige, like, you're sexually attractive to me at 13, and I'm an older guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was really the whole thing was gross. And I think that the idea that I took from it, like after I watched it the second time, I think what it was is that, you know, we all know that Philip could have taken this guy down in 2 seconds flat. And I think that the reason he didn't is because, you know, that would have given away a skill that, you know, he shouldn't have. Like he would have been showing himself to know something that he shouldn't know how to do.
Yeah.
But he definitely took note of the guy's name. We know that because he looked at the guy's credit card and, you know, and he called him by his first name, but I just knew it was going to come back to haunt him later, that, you know, the predator guy.
Yeah. The creeper guy. Yeah. He can't get beat up by a travel agent. You're right. So later on, Philip takes note for later on.
Yeah. And I think he just explained it to Paige that way, you know, saying, oh, you know, I didn't attack him because, you know, you're going to be getting this kind of attention now. But that wasn't really the reason that he didn't attack him. He just couldn't blow his cover like that.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. So he waters it down a little bit to protect both his cover and probably protect her. Like, honey, you're getting older and you're looking attractive to guys now. And so you're right. He kind of diffuses it that way.
Yeah.
So they come home in the Trans Am, the very 1981-ish or 2-ish Trans Am, right before Elizabeth's getting ready to knife this guy in the trunk. but before all this happens, they go next door to meet their new neighbors, Stan and his wife. And Stan tells them all about his job. He's working with counterintelligence, and they meet them and their son, and So now they have a bond with this little family next door. The kids know the kids, and the parents know the parents, and it's very interesting how they weave all these complications into their little spy game that they've got going here.
Yeah, I think it's really it's great for the dramatic tension, and I think it gives a really good it erases that kind of the blank spot that can be created by having a home life. Cause you know, like I think of series like Alias where, you know, you didn't see much of, like the main character's home life, you know, unless there was something really bad going on in her home. So, you know, this kind of having, an anti-spy agent living next door kind of brings all the tension to home. So you don't have to always be out on a mission. Your home life can be fraught with dramatic tension.
Right.
As a part of the story. I think that's really good that they wrote it that way.
Yeah. And then they add this further twist of like Philip and Elizabeth discussing their views on their jobs, right? Philip wants to defect. He wants to become an American.
Right.
They can get money for this guy that they've got in the trunk in the garage, like $3 million, like a lot of money.
Right.
And Elizabeth says, no, I'm a Russian soldier. And what would the children think?
Right.
Plus they might get caught. They might get the whole thing that they have as spies might get unraveled. But Philip wants to just bring it in the open and defect. So it's interesting. There's a lot of different factors twisting our view of like, okay, do we like these guys? Do we like the other guys? What do we want to happen here? But it's all very interesting.
That's one of the things that's just that I think that's probably the most compelling parts of this series is that it just really, you're always going back and forth in your mind about your allegiances, yourself as a viewer.
Yeah.
You know, because there's the allegiance between Elizabeth and Philip. Like I'm always kind of more mentally aligned with Philip because he's the one that, at least at this point for me, as far as my viewing goes, he's the person that's more American. He's the person that's more likely to be, you know, an American, and his values are aligned with mine. Like he's more about loving his spouse as opposed to the job and, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm more emotionally aligned with Philip, but like, for example, there was a scene, I don't know if you want to talk about that scene just now, in the garage when the neighbor comes over. I'm sorry, I can't remember the neighbor's name again, the anti-spy guy?
Stan.
Stan. When Stan comes over to Elizabeth and Philip's house, and he goes into their garage. Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah, that's like one scene away. So let's just get to it. So one thing before that scene, one of Philip's diversions is he runs. He's a runner. So he goes out running, and he has a flashback while he's running. He's thinking back about his time where he met Elizabeth. And we see how they were met. They were introduced. They met through General Zhukov, this other guy we're going to meet pretty soon. And they show the whole reveal. They reveal the whole arranged spy marriage that Elizabeth and Philip have, right? It's like not a love affair marriage. It's a spy marriage. You're going to pretend you're married. Or you're going to get married, but you're going to be spies, right? So they're two spies back in whatever, 1960, 20 years ago or whatever. So we see that. We see how that was all set up. And then while Philip's on his run and back in real time, we find out that he hears that this other guy who was on the prowl with him when they first caught that very first guy, that he was in the hospital and he died.
Right.
So he has a lot of emotions going on in his head, and he does all this while he's out on his run. So the next scene is the one where we see Stan asking about the jumper cables. So what were your thoughts on that?
Oh, okay. Actually, that wasn't the theme, the scene I was thinking of, but that's a good place to actually interject what I was thinking as well, because I was talking about loyalties, like feeling divided loyalties and like who you are rooting from scene to scene. For me, that changes throughout the different scenes of an episode. Like in the garage, when he's, you know, when he goes, when the anti-spy, when Stan goes over to get the jumper cables from Philip, I'm really torn because I know the good guy, you know, I know who the good guy is, but because my protagonist is a spy, you know, I'm kind of hoping that Philip doesn't get discovered. I don't want him to be found out, but in my idealism, in my mind, I'm thinking Stan should really, he's just moments away from discovering the truth. So, you know, it's a tough thing. And that tension, I think, is what's great about this series. It's always there.
Yeah, I never thought about that. I never had that conflict, Jamie, until later. Like, I always thought, be careful, Philip. Stan's going to catch you. Don't let him catch you. So what happens in the scene is Stan needs jumper cables, or he pretends he does, whatever, but he wants jumper cables. And Philip invites him right into the garage. Come on in, and don't forget, this guy's in the trunk of the car in the garage, still in there. He's got, like, a ball gag on. He's tied up, but he's right there in the trunk. And the jumper cables are in the trunk. So Philip takes Stan right into the garage and opens the trunk while Stan's kind of admiring the car from the front and casually takes out these jumper cables and shuts the trunk just in the nick of time before Stan can walk around and see what's in the trunk, see this guy in the trunk. So I was hoping Philip wouldn't get caught. I was definitely on Philip's side during this scene.
Yeah, I was on his side and not on his side. So it was tough. I mean, like, you know, I was with you because he's my protagonist. I didn't want him to get caught because then that, you know, that's the whole point of the series. But it's hard, you know, because you know that, you know, that what they're idealistically thinking, you know, we're supposed to be for our fellow countrymen. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But but again, I think that's what the series does so well.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm all American and all that. But I'm caught up in watching this drama. I'm like, wow, I've grown to like these other people first, not Stan.
Okay, so let me ask you, because there's another scene in the garage that has Stan and Philip in it. And I don't know how far away we are from talking about that, but when we get to that scene, I want to ask you a question about loyalties when we get to that scene.
Okay. Remember it, and we'll talk about it. So next, we're going to meet John Boy Walton here, Richard Thomas. John Boy Richard Thomas is a character in the show. His name is Frank Gadd, and he's the task force leader who is tasked to figure out what happened to Timoshev, the guy in the trunk. So we don't know much about him yet at this point. He becomes a pretty important character later on. But we get a really brief introduction to him, Frank Gad here, as the American high up in the task force to figure out this Timashev problem. Timashev was the traitor that's in the trunk. So the next scene is at the school. It's just Philip and Henry at Henry's school, and they're listening to the Star Spangled Banner. And
right.
It's got the whole American Apollo, Soyuz, Gemini, Apollo 9, Apollo 10, very patriotic, almost Russian-American like camaraderie type scene where we're going to work together with the Russians and put a space station up there and you know, just kind of work together. But do you think, Jamie, was this the scene that finally convinced Philip to defect and become full-blown American?
No, I don't. Wasn't it before that that he? I thought it was before that he mentioned that. That he wanted to defect.
Well, he always wanted. Yeah, he mentioned it before that, but I think this might have been the straw that pushed him over the edge. He's at the school. They're singing the Star Spangled Banner. It's all American. Everybody's happy. It's like rah rah USA. All kinds of nationalism and all that. And then the next scene is the one where he goes home, where he decides he's going to go home and untrunk the guy, ungag him, and turn him over to Stan.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you know, you're right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so that was right before that. Because, like, him and Henry at school doing all this rah-rah American patriotic stuff. And then he's like, all right, I've made my mind up. So he ungags Stan, or not Stan, he ungags the Timashev guy and takes him out of the trunk, and Elizabeth catches them. And
you're right.
Then she reveals everything. She puts it all on the table, like, I would die for Russia. She wants to be the one that kills this guy that's about to be turned over to Stan.
Right.
And Philip wants to know why. What happened? What did he do to you? And then we see this, like you were saying, he's very intimate about how he kills this guy.
Right.
She actually says, all right, go ahead, turn him over. I give up. You're right. But he's like, wait a minute. What did he do to you? And when he finds out, his maleness turns over, takes control over his desire to become an American defector. And he's like, defending his woman, I think.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Is it his maleness and his desire to you know, like his testosterone, or do you think it's just like his love really for Elizabeth? And you know, and I think about that. That's one of those scenes that made me wonder about him and what he leads with. What's his most important attribute, because that's what he did. I mean, like, you know, that guy, when he attacked Elizabeth, he did it to her from behind and, you know, like violently, and there was no kind of intimacy to it. It was just violent and rough and horrible, right?
And, are you talking about Timashev now?
When Timashev attacks Elizabeth, like back in the 60s.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right? But then when, you know, that flip, that moment later, basically, like a, you know, like a mental moment later, when Philip realizes what's happened, you know, from that, he kills him in an opposite way, completely opposite way, face to face, very calmly, looking him straight in the eye and taking the life out of him that way. And both of those things are about Elizabeth, like, you know, this guy who was detestable and who's now dead. And, you know, and Philip and his reaction, you know, this is like basically both of them, that was their expression of how they feel about her. That's the way I took in the scene.
That's interesting. I didn't look at it in that much depth, but I don't make any difference between his maleness and macho-ness about being a guy to protect the woman and his love for that woman. I think those are the same thing.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's interesting to me, because as much as he wanted to, he was willing to defect in order to get out of that life. And he was moments away from being able to do it. And she'd given up and she didn't care. She was going to let him do it. He gave all of that up and killed that guy when he didn't have to, because she was hurt.
Yeah.
You know, because he had done that to her.
His which love I think is stronger than his desire to become American.
Right. Yeah.
So, Jamie, would you ever want your man to kill a guy in your honor for you?
I would hope that would never, ever, ever be necessary.
But come on, it'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Maybe beating somebody up might be kind of cool, like in my honor. I wouldn't want to have to deal with the morgue and in the coroner's office and everybody else.
You're too practical.
Maybe so. I don't know.
So we see some cool Phil Collins music from the 80s. It's like all body melting, yeah. Sex combo. Like they dissolve this guy's body now in a drum, very Breaking Bad-ish. But then they have sex in the car, and it's all music with Phil Collins, and it's all spun together. Very cool.
Yeah. And that was the other thing I thought was really interesting, because they're the way that they are together physically. It seems like there's more there than what there seems to be in other times. You know, like this, and I think probably that scene with them together was more meaningful for both of them, because I think she realized, you know, how much he must care about her after what he did. And so maybe it made it, you know, that much more meaningful for both of them, I think.
What made him show that he cared for her more?
Well, because he was willing to kill Timoshev. Rather than turn him in, and they just got finished disposing of his body, which all of it sounds so obscene, really, because you're talking about murder and destruction of a corpse and everything, as opposed to combined with making love and all this romantic stuff and Phil Collins music, but my point is that I think that maybe that they had a much better time together, because she knows that like he was her hero, basically, in a very extreme sense of the concept that he killed this guy for her honor.
Maybe I don't know. I think melting the body kind of turned her on.
You think? I don't know. She's a tough one, so that could be.
Anyway, it was a very cool culmination of events. They tied up a few threads there with just the sex in the car. So next we see Phillips settle the score with that creeper guy that was picking up on Paige and picking on Paige. He goes and he has this, they have some pretty interesting costumes, like disguises. He has this long hair mechanic type disguise. Shows up while the creeper guy is like making a barbecue with the lamest looking barbecue meal I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's like two hot dogs and two buns on a grill.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't seem like the grandest barbecue ever.
No, throw a couple burgers in there, some chicken maybe. It's not even worth lighting the fire for two hot dogs. But Phillips sneaks up on him. He's like, "Hey, how's it going?" The guy looks at him like, "What are you doing in my backyard?" And Phillip, whatever, martial arts him down, and then he eats his hot dog.
Yeah. What I thought was so cool, was really, really awesome about it, was like in the one scene, like you see the guy, right? He's standing over the grill. He's messing with the hot dogs and the whole thing. And Phillip is over his shoulder like, like from our vantage point, he's to the right, right? And then the camera angle changes, and then you see Phillip's not there anymore, and you realize that Phillip's like from our direction, like he's come all the way around, and he's now to our left, to the guy's right, and the guy still doesn't realize he's standing right there.
Yeah.
And then, and then he attacks him and just goes to work on him and makes the guy really sorry. It was a really, violent scene. And most of the time when violence is really well done, I like it. I'm not one of those girls that's like, "Oh, I don't know. Oh, it was too violent. No, I didn't like it." This was a great violent scene.
Yeah.
And especially the part where he just stuck the pitchfork into his hand, the turning fork.
Yeah. Well, he's a master of barbecue subterfuge. He really is a really good fighter, because we saw him be a really good fighter with the other guy in the very first scenes and stuff. But yeah, he sticks the hot dog fork right in the guy's hand.
Yeah.
But that guy paid, man. He deserved it, that creeper guy.
Yes, he did. He totally deserved it.
So,
and he lost his lunch too. So I hope the hot dog was good.
Yeah. So next we see Elizabeth go to meet with General Zhukov in real time, and he talks to her about the failed mission. The mission was to catch this American guy, the very first guy, Timoshev, and turn him back over to the Russians and put him on a boat back to Russia. But Zhukov also kind of knows about Philip's loyalty, right, his questionable loyalty to the Russian cause. Because he asks him, like, what, there have been reports on him, are they accurate, and is he really about to defect? And Elizabeth defends Philip. She dismisses everything and says, no, he's down, man. He's ready to fight for the Russian cause.
Well, you know, what he said was, can we trust him because you have reported about him in the past over the years? So she has been reporting to the government about Philip and questioning his loyalty. She has actually been doing that.
Yep.
And at this point in time, she says, no, I was wrong. You know, he's trustworthy. It was nothing, and that kind of thing. And she has his back, you know, right then. But yeah, that's the thing that was interesting to me, is that she's been the one who was questioning his loyalty to the government.
Yeah. She toes the line for sure for the Russians.
Yeah. That was, to me, that was really shocking though, because that's not just her partner. He's her husband. He's the father of her kids.
Well, and she is under disguise.
You know? Well, yeah, but still, I mean, like, literally, those are their two kids.
I know, under the guise of, like, spydom.
Right, right. But I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, like, to me, that's like a big, that's a big line. I don't think I could ever cross. Even if I were a spy, I don't know that I could report against my spouse, who was also my partner, you know, who was also my fellow spy.
That's part of the beauty of the show, man. It's like, what's more important, the mission they're on or the love that they have, is like being thrown into this odd circumstance with each other.
Exactly.
And actually, we see a little bit more of that, because they're together and they're drinking vodka, like celebrating, right? And he's like, and Philip's like, why didn't you tell me about Timoshev? Like, I would have understood you, baby. Just tell me, I'll help you. Man, I don't think we got an answer to that. They just kind of left it. But you could see, you know, he cares about her. He doesn't want her to... He wanted to help her resolve this rapist dude and get revenge on him for her.
Right. But what was, you know, what was neat was that was her answer. Because her answer was, I didn't want to tell you because it was from our life before. We weren't supposed to talk about our life before. And he said, it wasn't really our life before. It was during training. And then what did she do? She started to tell him about who she was. She told him what her name was.
Yeah.
What her original name was. And that was something they were warned against doing. And I guess this is for the first time she's actually willing to open up and tell him about her life before, which to me is kind of like a deepening of their relationship. That means that she trusts him enough to take a new step with him after like 20 something years.
Yeah. So the pendulum's swinging more towards the relationship for her than for the task of being spies.
Exactly.
So next we see their initial, it's a flashback of them initially moving to the States, and they're moving into a hotel room, and they're kind of amazed by the air conditioner in the room. Like, you say, they don't have air conditioners in Russia. Like, wait, it's putting out cold air. That's cool. And Philip tries to get intimate with her, and she rejects him. She's like, well, I'm not really ready. We're soldiers. We're not really a couple. Uh-huh. And that was interesting, too.
Yeah, it was. It was really interesting, because even then you could tell that he liked her, And he was more into her than she was into him, because when she spurned him, he said something like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's just like, you know, we're supposed to be newlyweds. And, you know, eventually at some point we're supposed to have kids. And I guess it would be really weird if you didn't ever like me. And she never answers him. She never says, she doesn't even acknowledge that he said that.
Yeah. Well, he's not just a Russian guy trying to be his, you know, play his proper role as a spy. He's also a dude. He's a right. He's a guy with a girl in a hotel room, so he's trying to make those moves happen too.
That's right.
So then we see the final scene. Stan breaks into the garage. Stan's the agent, the American agent neighbor, breaks into their garage, and that, I guess it was before garage door openers, because he's picking the lock of the garage. He's going to lift the door up. In 1982 or whatever. And he gets in there and he picks the trunk of the car and he looks in there and he finds nothing and he leaves. But we see Philip kind of standing in the shadows with his gun ready in stealth mode. He would have ended Stan if he had to.
This is the one that I was going to ask you about. I was going to ask you about this one, because in this scene, who were you more afraid for?
Well, I think we found out that Stan was clear of the threat after the, you know, that he was kind of clear of it. We found out after he was already clear of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me think that Philip was wiser. Like, he's, wow, this guy's like onto this. He's mm-hmm. not getting guys sneaking into his garage without him knowing about it.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
his status as a spy was elevated in that scene for me.
I agree with you 100%. I thought he was so much more deadly. It was amazing to me. It was a shocking, shocking scene. I love the way that it was constructed. But I have to say, the one I was afraid for was Stan. I was afraid for Stan from the beginning to the end. And when he first entered the garage, before we knew that Philip was in there, I was like, oh, man, he's going to get caught. And I was through the whole thing, I wasn't thinking about, you know, what he was going to find on Philip and Elizabeth. I wasn't thinking about any of that. I was just thinking, Stan, you're going to get yourself killed. Stan, oh, no, no, no. And, you know, and then at the end, and then, you know, when he didn't find anything and he was leaving and I realized he was safe, then I was like, man, this is so bad. And I started to think about Philip and Elizabeth. But then when they showed Philip from the side with the gun, I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Look out. Dude is hardcore.
I like that you brought this up, because I guess I didn't ever worry about Stan, but it elevated them both to me. Like, Stan, it made me think, wow, Stan's not just some dummy neighbor. He really thinks he was suspicious. He was onto Philip. So he came and checked it out. But then I'm like, okay, so Stan's got the upper hand. But then they show Philip with the gun in the shadows. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Philip's elevated too. He's a couple notches up above where I had put him. I didn't think they were going to kill each other. I guess I didn't really worry about that, but I guess it elevated their status, both of their statuses for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was so cool. But yeah, I was scared. I was like, oh man, Stan's gonna get himself murdered. But it worked out well.
And then in perfect MTV fashion, we end with Tusk, the more of the Tusk song by Fleetwood Mac, that just kind of put a perfect bow on it.
It really did. It was great. It was great. Great episode.
So that's it for the pilot of The Americans. You can watch The Americans probably on, I think I watched it on Netflix. Is that where you saw it, Jamie?
I've seen it. I don't know that I've seen it on Netflix. It's on something. There's some streaming service I have. Oh, it's Amazon. It's Amazon Prime.
Okay. Yeah, it's another good one. But it's going to come back on the air for season 3 on the 28th, January 28th. I think. Yeah, January 28th on
FX
at 10 p.m., probably 10 p.m. Eastern. So you can check us out on West Coast Project and see our podcasts for a number of other fan casts that we do. My Twitter handle is @scathingtweets. Jamie, what's your Twitter?
@wordgirly.
Okay. And do you have any other way of anything else online that you want to promote, Jamie? Any websites or blogs?
Yeah. Wordist @WordPress.
Okay. Cool. And that's it for this pilot trial episode of The Americans. Thanks, Jamie. You were great.
Well, thanks so much.